order March the 23rd, 2005, and I'd like to welcome everyone here today. A few little changes in the agenda. Senate Bill 411 is going to be heard, but it's just going to be heard a little later. The sponsor of the bill has requested that we have a certain guest of his that would like to be here to testify, so we're going to postpone 411. Skipping down to Senate Bill 868, we will not be hearing 868 at all. Judith, perhaps you can explain that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 868, the requester asked that this particular measure be pulled due to the fact that violations with respect to excess vehicle weight are not compiled by the Department of Transportation. In other words, the department would not know if it was the first violation or the 10th violation. And so there's no way to determine if they're eligible for a fee reduction simply because the way that's recorded, they would not be able to determine which number violation it is. So the requester has asked that 868 be pulled.
All right. Judith, will Senator Deckert be called, or
yes.
Will he be here?
Yes.
He'll be
going
called.
To
All right.
Next door at the hearing room.
All right. With that in mind, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 842. Committee members, you have before you three amendments. The first amendment, -2, simply reduces the amount, and then we have either -3 or -4. So, Judith, let's talk about the bill and the amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 842, if you remember, is the measure that imposes a fee on the retail sale of studded tires or on the installation of studs on tires. We have the -2 amendments, which reduces the fee imposed on the retail sale of new studded tires or on the installation of studs in the tire from $10 to $5. The -3 amendments impose a fee only if the point of sale or installation is in Benton, Clackamas, Lane, Lynn, Marion, Multnomah, or Washington County. And the -4 amendments would impose a fee if the point of sale is west of the summit of the Cascade Mountains, and it also adds a definition of tire dealer.
Lane County or Lane?
Lane County. I said it correctly, realizing that I had typed it incorrectly on the preliminary SMS.
So we might have a 36 county.
And I will just note here that we have a potential revenue impact received on the measure, and this bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. And I would welcome Senator Deckert to the front. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. And it's definitely afternoon.
I know.
Feeling it. Ryan Deckert, State Senator Beaverton. I feel you've probably heard the arguments in favor of this legislation, and so I probably don't need to repeat them. What I've done is met with each member of your committee upon your request, Madam Chair, and tried to come up with some amendments that you have before you that hopefully reflect the will of the committee. And I guess the only comment I would have is whatever y'all decide to go with, I'm comfortable with. I think we need to make some sort of statement, however symbolic, that on cost responsibility. And I think we primarily need to make it where the damage is being done. The $11 million at ODOT's estimate is done, and which is in the Valley. And so before you see a -2 amendment, which would change the fee from $10 a tire to $5, I'm comfortable with that. I'm also comfortable with sticking with 10, whatever the will of the committee is. The -3 specifies that the studded tire would only be imposed in Benton, Clackamas, Lane, Lynn, Marion, Multnomah, and Washington County. We do know that the majority of the damage, almost all of the damage, occurs in the Willamette Valley, and so to me, also comfortable with that amendment if the committee decides to go in that direction, because that is where the majority of the damage is, and on the valley floor you just see very little snow or ice precipitation. I think this winter maybe one day. And then the dash 4 specifies that the studded tire fee will be imposed only at points of sale west of the Cascades, specifies that the fee will only be used for repair damage done west of the Cascades. Another just attempt to at least accommodate some of the arguments that were made on the opposing side of this bill when you heard it. So that's the bill, the current bill I feel comfortable with, and you know what it does. It just imposes a $10 fee across the state to get at some of the, it doesn't get at, I think it would have to be $42 a tire to actually generate what is the damage that ODOT estimates. That seems too high, so hopefully this might be agreeable to this committee.
All right, questions? Any questions? All right, thank you very much.
Where's Metzger?
All right, I don't have the list. I need the list
well,
for
this
people that are going
the work
to.
Session.
Oh,
so
that's right. So I can just call up a few people,
sure.
Can I?
Yes.
All right. I would like to call someone from ODOT who is here and ready to answer a few questions. Good afternoon. One of the questions that I have is, and I'm sure it's in these notes somewhere, but it's the total damage that you estimate from studded tires, the number that you've given us probably many times.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Jackley with the Highway Division. That estimate is $11 million for repairing damage on state, county, and city roads.
Madam Chair, can I ask a follow-up question on that particular topic?
Sure.
John, isn't that the number, though, that the department expends or spends to repair damage? Isn't the actual damage done much larger than that, but the ODOT only spends $11 million? Is there a discrepancy between those two numbers?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, that's correct. That doesn't take care of all the damage to the system. That's our estimate of what's spent on it on an annual basis.
Okay.
Just to follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Can you give us an estimate of the total damage to the state's highway system due to studded tires? Not just what the department spends to repair said damage.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, I don't have that estimate. I could go back and see if we have something, but the figure that we've looked at is the actual expenditures, which is $11 million. But we do know that it's higher.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Senator Prezansky.
That $11 million, John, I'm hearing is statewide. Is what's actually being paid out, or is that just... Can you give us the geographic area where this money is actually being utilized?
Madam Chair, Senator Prezansky, that $11 million figure is statewide, but our estimate is that it's primarily spent west of the Cascades in the Valley area that you all were talking about earlier.
There seems to be two different west of the Cascade amendments, one that has six counties or seven counties. And then the other looks like it would take everything west of the Cascades, including the Umpqua and the Rogue Valley. Is that correct? Or do you know?
Madam Chair, Senator Prezansky, I have not seen the amendments.
Well, we probably need to have that clarified.
Look in the dashboards. It says summit of the Cascade Mountains means the term given in ORS. Or 77.001, whatever that is. And looking at the dash threes, it definitely limits it to what I would consider the counties that are part of the Willamette Valley, and also limits the repairs that would be generated from the sale of the studded tires to those counties.
Madam Chair, Senator Prezansky, I think your distinction is correct there. We're not saying that there isn't any studded tire damage at all in that southern part, but by far the vast majority is going to be in the area described in the Dash 3 amendments.
Do you see the meaning given to it, Senator Starr? Senator Brzezinski, would you read that for me?
Once I read it myself, I don't want to
okay.
anyone.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah. Summit of the Cascade Mountains is considered to be the line beginning at the intersection of the northern boundary of the state of Oregon and the western boundary of Wasco County, hence southerly along the western boundaries of Wasco, Jefferson, Deschutes, and Klamath counties to the southern boundary of the state of Oregon. So it would basically be everything west of the Cascades.
Right, it would be.
North to south, border okay. to border.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I guess I know that there's a desire to move this bill maybe sooner than later, but I guess Senator Decker and I have talked about this. I see potentially a couple of things. It looks like we could do the dash twos if we wanted to reduce the actual cost to the purchaser, or we can leave in the original bill, and then we could add in either the dash threes or the dash fours.
That's correct.
Is there any way that we could carry this over for the next hearing? Because, one, we have two members who aren't here, and this is pretty significant. Change, and I think it would be fair to get their input before we actually vote on these different things, because we're talking about basically a quarter of the state, which of course is where the most population is, geographic quarter of the state, or we're looking at potentially what would most people say it's half the state, even though it's not geographically half.
Senator Metzger will be here. He will just be delayed.
Okay.
So Senator Whitsett is excused.
Right.
We can either do that, or we can wait until we can move it and have the discussion after 6:40, after we do the other bill
today. Just recess
today.
For now, if you want.
Mm-hmm. And so we can just. I will. What I will do then is close the work session for now on 8:42, and. Perhaps we will reconvene and talk about 8:42. Hopefully I have some people here that I can move on to Senate Bill 640. I gotta get my bill. Where is my bill? Must be right here. Must have a big green thing on it that I can't keep me from seeing. But yeah, there it is. And is Senator Ferrioli gonna? He is, and he's here. Welcome, Senator Ferrioli. I will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 640.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Today I would like to, with your permission, read the testimony of Senator Jackie Winters, who could not be here today. With permission. Chair Verger and members of the Senate Transportation Committee, thank you for holding a public hearing on Senate Bill 640. Although I'm at home recuperating from triple bypass surgery, I feel it is of the utmost importance that my testimony in support of Senate Bill 640 be heard. As you know, methamphetamine use quietly has made its way into the lives of many Oregonians and is now at epidemic proportions. It is considered by law enforcement, medical providers, and human service agencies to be at epidemic levels. All the ugliness associated with illegal drugs such as child abuse, neglect, and crimes against persons and property nearly always tie to identity theft. Identity theft through the creation of fraudulent driver's licenses has become a popular and easy method for criminals to gain access to bank accounts, credit cards, social services, online purchases, negotiating stolen checks, and eventually providing what the thief really wants, money to make, buy, and sell, otherwise deal in drugs. Oregon ranks last in the nation in driver's license security and seventh for identity theft. Portland has a higher rate of identity theft than does Seattle, Chicago, New York, or Washington, D.C. It literally takes only a few minutes by an individual experienced in ID theft to create a fake driver's license. Senate Bill 640 will close the loophole to those thieves moving from one DMV office to another with false documents, obtaining multiple fraudulent driver's licenses. Senate Bill 640, through biometrics, will quickly identify a person applying under a different name. Marion County Sheriff Raul Ramirez has identified many individuals in the Oregon DMV system who may have up to 10 or more different licenses, all with a different name. While it's easy to recreate birth certificates or change other personal documents, it is impossible to fake a fingerprint. If Oregon is going to lead the way in reducing methamphetamine use, if Oregon is going to lead the way in reducing child neglect and abuse associated with drug abuse, if Oregon is going to lead the way in reducing identity theft, Senate Bill 640 needs to pass. I urge your support. Thank you sincerely, Senator Jackie Winters. Madam Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions, and then I'd like to add a little of my own observations to the record.
I was going to ask you if you wouldn't also like to share your own thoughts, because I know you feel very sincerely about this subject. Are there any questions from the testimony that was written from Senator Winters?
Unless Senator Farrell, you could get Senator Winters' response, I probably will not question hers.
Well, you might get a similar response. Any questions? All right. Tell us how you feel about it.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, the issue for me has become very real in terms of the magnitude of the problem and the immediacy of the problem, and primarily the Senate Republicans started out with the issue of methamphetamine because our town hall meetings and work that we've done with constituencies, and I'm certain you have the same experience in all your communities, have indicated that methamphetamine use is growing, and it's growing concern to people in our home neighborhoods. What we did was held a press conference early in the legislative session, and out of that we started to get a lot of feedback from the public, encouragement toward coming to some kind of comprehensive approach to methamphetamine use. What we did not know at that time was the incredible connection between methamphetamine manufacturing and trafficking and identity theft. And thanks to the efforts of law enforcement, we've become aware of their efforts at creating a new clearinghouse for identity theft and crimes using false identity, their efforts to join forces with each other and form an organization that specializes in developing the tools to fight this portion of the crime. And the other aspect is that they have made us aware of is the tremendous connection between identity theft, the fraudulent movement of money, the crimes against individuals and citizens where identity theft is a principal element of the crime. Up to 85% of all the busts involving meth manufacture and distribution also involve fraudulent documents. And when you think about it, it makes sense. Obviously, the criminals have a vested interest in keeping their identity secret. They have to move quantities of materials. They have to purchase precursors. They have to buy lab equipment. They have to transport this equipment and set up labs. They have to rent properties. They have to rent rental vehicles. They have to open bank accounts and move cash. All of those things are facilitated by fraudulent identification. In Oregon, the very best and most universally accepted piece of identification is the Oregon driver's license. It is one of those sort of gold standards that people require. I mean, you walk into a place and offer to cash a check or to negotiate a check, the first thing people want to see is your driver's license. I always wondered why it is that merchants believe that I have money in my bank account just because I have a driver's license, but they often think that that's true. What's particularly irritating is that Oregon currently has no system for preventing multiple driver's licenses from being issued to the same individual. If you have a suite of different fraudulent identities and a couple of pieces of identification to go with your photograph, you can actually get driver's licenses from the Department of Motor Vehicles in multiple locations. And Sheriff Ramirez was able to show up to 10 driver's licenses issued to the same individual. individual within a fairly short period of time at different DMV offices. And I want to make clear to the committee, these are not fraudulent driver's licenses. These are legitimate, state-produced, unquestionably valid pieces of identification. The element of fraud is that the person getting them isn't the person that they represent themselves to be. And they're virtually indistinguishable. They are not distinguishable from driver's licenses that all of us carry in our own possession. I have to tell you that you will hear from the Department of Motor Vehicles that that they've moved to a new vendor, that they have a new form of driver's license that doesn't involve laminations, that the information is actually embedded in the plastic rather than laminated to the plastic, and that makes counterfeiting harder. I will point out to you that there's never been a technology that's been purchasable from a vendor that can't be purchased or obtained illegally or illicitly by criminals. And that's if you doubt that, look at the number of counterfeit bills that are in circulation in America today. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of counterfeit currencies in circulation today. So it's not a big obstacle to get either the same kind of equipment or the identical equipment as happened to the Department of Motor Vehicles when some equipment was actually stolen or when employees colluded with criminals to produce between 60 and 80,000 fraudulent driver's licenses that in every way are valid. The point is, Madam Chairman, that without some incontrovertible mechanism of identifying individuals, this crime will continue. And we believe that the incontrovertible mechanism for identifying individuals is simply to embed not the actual fingerprint, but the measurements of the whorls and loops on the fingerprint reduced to a numeric code in the information that's coded in the file. So that you can do a record search and look for the same numeric string, and if you get it, then you look at the photograph that's in the file, and if you get a match, then you've obviously got somebody trying to get a fraudulent duplicate or fraudulent original license. The other information, the other biometric, is the photograph. And obviously the physical photograph is in the file at Department of Motor Vehicles, but also the measurements of points of reference on the face are encoded in a numeric string and carried in the file. And in this way, you can compare literally tens of thousands of files in just a few minutes. Other states that have done this are able to essentially duplicate the level of service that we have in Oregon. And that is, today you can go get a driver's license. You walk into the DMV office. You pay your fee. You fill out your documentation. Within minutes, you'll be asked to stand for a photograph, and the document will be delivered to you, and it's a one-stop situation. In some states, they have included this type of biometric information and still been able to maintain the one-stop system. In other states, the biometric information is encoded in the card, and it takes several days, and the card comes to the address of record. You know, a further safeguard that fraudulent addresses aren't being used. So, Madam Chairman, either way you want it, whether you want a one-stop system as Oregonians enjoy today or one that uses a few days to make those files and the comparisons that are necessary, it's still a relatively small price to pay to make sure that the person obtaining a driver's license is the true and actual person that's applying for one. Those things are absolutely critical, in my opinion, in the fight against methamphetamine and trafficking and all sorts of white-collar crime. So, Madam Chairman, I would suggest we have a great reason to do this. We have the means and mechanisms at hand to do this. There is a small cost associated with adding biometric data to the driver's license. We've talked to folks about that. Ordinary citizens think $2 per driver's license is not too great an insurance policy cost to pay to assure that their driver's license isn't going to be used by meth addicts or traffickers in drugs, and that is a relatively small price to pay for the a peace of mind that comes with knowing nobody else can fraudulently use or steal your identity. So, Madam Chairman, those are the sort of things that I have learned from law enforcement. I hope you will hear today from members of the law enforcement community, members of the prosecutorial community, mm-hmm. members of the banking industry, and folks folks here from the credit unions that will tell you their interest in seeing some mechanism to combat identity theft.
Well, we do have a very interesting list of people that will be witnessing for us, and thank you very much. And I know that Senator Winters appreciates it, and how is she?
Senator Winters is now snapping orders at whoever calls her on the telephone.
She's getting better.
She is feeling better.
Getting better, good.
She is ambulatory. She's she walked six blocks yesterday, my personal conversations with her have been challenging, as they always are, because she has an agenda and she wants it run.
Excellent. Well,
thank you,
Madam Chairman. Give her our very best regards.
We will do. And, Madam Chairman, before I leave my testimony, I wanted to make clear that when we, from the Republican caucus, started down this road, we were interested in this issue, and we've come to the realization that this has no partisanship, no party, no neighborhood, no one has a corner on the concern. And the more folks we've talked about this issue to, the more we realize that this is one of those transcendent issues that really does cross all sorts of demographic lines. And our interest is in seeing this bill become a vehicle that every single legislator can sign off on, that every legislator will want to support, and that we move forward, I hope, with 90 votes at the end of the day.
I doubt very seriously is when those young people are either taken off to jail or prison that anyone says, are your family Democratic or Republican?
That's absolutely true, ma'am. And I'm sure that when they're breaking into your car or stealing your identity, that they care what your voter registration is.
So. One of the things that I suppose that I read about things that happen and I'm sorry about it, or I really hate to read about the collusion, but when I see good people drawn in to helping criminals, there's a huge sense of disappointment. And I think I go through life always just thinking it's going to all be all right, and people are going to act the way they should. And I always have this deep sense of disappointment when they don't.
Madam Chairman, thank you for that sentiment. I guess the other thing is I have had friends, and I know that there are members within the body that can talk from firsthand experience about the violation people feel when their identity is stolen and used fraudulently. You know, most of us spend a lifetime trying to build our credibility and protect our credit rating, because those things mean the ability to have access to the help for our families and our children, the means and mechanisms to make our dreams come true. And this is one of those things that I think we can do that will help stop that violation from occurring.
In our country today, we have so many bright people. We're now going to have smart guns, that the only person that can shoot it is the person that it belongs to. So I guess it's going to be like the car that has the key that just when you walk up, it knows it's you. So, well, thank you very much, Senator Ferrioli. And
you.
I'm going to call Lorna Young from the Department of Motor Vehicles next. Thank you for coming today, Lorna.
Oh, my pleasure, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Happy to hear what DMV does and what we need to do and about your new contract.
I have had the opportunity to meet with some of the sponsors of the bill and to share some of the concerns that we have with the language. And I understand that there are some proposed changes to the bill. So while I'm more than happy to discuss or to start off the testimony now, I was wondering if it would be more beneficial to hear from the proponents of the bill and what are the proposed changes they may have, because I'm going to speak to the language of the bill as it's written, and I understand that there are some proposed changes to that. So I will work it any way you wish, but there, I just want to make sure that we're most useful to the committee.
Would it be helpful to you if I continued with the witnesses?
I think so, and then I could provide additional information as needed. Would that work for you?
I'd be happy to do that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just step back, and I will call Sheriff Juan Ramirez.
Madam Chair, is it okay if we come up as a group
You can. Be happy. In fact, the people waiting in turn would be very happy about that. I'll have you introduce your guest with you. All right, we have Chief of Police from Milwaukee.
Mary Kanzler, Madam Chair.
My grandson was playing New Orleans jazz with a group at a restaurant in Milwaukee. And the gentleman, I wish I knew the name of it, Lindy's, is there a Lindy's or something like that? Anyway, the man said, now a lot of young people would like to go to Florida or do other things, but this young man wants to play music in Milwaukee on spring break. All right, let's see, who else do we have? Jeff Kaye? Jeff with you? All right. And who else?
I'm Bradbury.
All right. All right. Please
Madam Chair, we were going to start out with Chief Kanzler and then Lieutenant Kayer, myself, and then with our district attorney.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Larry Kanzler, and I'm the Chief of Police in Milwaukee. I wanted to provide you a little scope of the size of the problem as I've experienced in my professional duties and my 38-year law enforcement career, where I've served as a police officer in five different jurisdictions and chief of police in three. And it's been a calling of mine, for lack of a better term. And I've never seen anything of more of an epidemic proportion than methamphetamine. And the underlying contributing causes of the support for methamphetamine being identity theft. In Clackamas County, where Milwaukee is located, identity theft is up 1,500%. In the city of Milwaukee, it's up over 300%. Property crimes in Portland, just adjacent to Milwaukee, are up 34% just in 1 year. We're finding that the genesis for all the crime that's being generated is for the procurement of methamphetamine, or the precursors to create methamphetamine. We have gone to great extremes to try to isolate where the vulnerabilities for identity theft occur. One of my associate jobs is as the operation manager for a program called RISIC, the Regional Economic Crime Investigation Center. I serve as a pro tem position there to try to coordinate the support services to identity theft and the law enforcement coordination efforts through four different states and the associations of sheriffs and police officers within the four states of Oregon, Washington, Nevada, and Arizona. We have all come to the conclusion that identity theft and the manufacture of fraudulent driver's licenses is one of the key components. Recently, Milwaukee is in the process of charging an individual and prosecuting through the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, where he testified before the court stating that he was unaware that his driver's license had been suspended as a result of police action. He brought in a witness who lived at the address who his driver's license reported him living at, who stated under oath and under affidavit that he's never lived there, and he has had that driver's license for 8 years. One of the things we're going to prosecute him for is the fact that he fraudulently put down that address as his own residence. It wasn't his address. He's never lived at that location. But our current system with the Department of Motor Vehicles allows a person, without any verification of address, to create that false impression that you live at an address because they issue your driver's license to you right over the counter. Had that driver's license been mailed to him, they would have found that he didn't live at that address and would have been returned to the Department of Motor Vehicles. This debacle would have been, and it's happened hundreds of times, not just this one occasion. There's no check and balance to that address verification. The other thing we're finding is a great deal of driver's licenses that are being produced in apartments and residences on computers. We've seized dozens of computers and printers with very elaborate and sophisticated software that allows criminals to create driver's licenses in support of the purchase of methamphetamine. It allows them to buy the precursors that they now have to register for through the governor's decree on the fight on methamphetamine. They have to declare who they are and show identification before they can buy some over-the-counter precursors to methamphetamine. Well, these people use false driver's licenses to identify themselves so they can buy those things under the proposition that they were lawfully purchased, when in fact the driver's licenses were false. Just today, I received a documentation which I think was, to me, was very alarming. And it was a group of people calling themselves the Recovery Association Project. And they've been holding meetings in Clackamas County and have identified 115 properties, low-income rental properties, that have been so badly contaminated by methamphetamine cooking that they are uninhabitable. 19 of those properties are in Milwaukee itself, or in Clackamas County, Milwaukee area. The idea being that we are looking for housing, affordable housing for people, and affordable housing is there, but it's being contaminated at such a high rate it can't be inhabited. People can't live. So these are the environments where our kids are being allowed to grow up in. We have people, single parent families, and drug cooks and identity thefts all commingling under the same guise, and it's of epidemic proportion. I don't think in the 38 years I've been doing this job, I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. I ask your support to create the safeguards in our driver's license issuing process to provide us with a remedy to prevent the hundreds and thousands, in some cases, of false driver's licenses that have been issued. It's also, if you look at it from a national security perspective, these driver's licenses, we don't know who they're being issued to. We don't know that if they're methamphetamine user or they're national threats to our national safety. So I would ask that you would help us put in place safeguards to make our driver's license issue process a reliable one. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Board, I am Lieutenant Jeff Kerr. I represent the Regional Economic Crime Investigation Center. I'm the operations manager, and I oversee the activities of this center. Part of our work is to combat identity theft and fraud and to find innovative ways to lessen or slow the trend of identity theft and fraud. Through our research, through looking over past cases, we found that one of the big problems is identity theft is the manufacturing or even the issuance of an identity card that doesn't properly identify a person by their real name, real address. Part of the support materials that you'll see is from the FTC. It will show that Oregon ranks very high in identity theft. It ranks very high in fraud. The Portland, Beaverton, Vancouver metropolitan area ranks very high. I think we're number 12 or 13 and we're the 30th largest state metropolitan area in the United States, yet we're ranked very high in fraud and identity theft. One of the things that we found in combating fraud and identity theft is the issuance of ID cards and serving of search warrants at meth houses. During our investigations into fraud and identity theft, we found numerous documents, supporting documents that people use to go to DMV and obtain an ODL or an ID card, such as our Social Security cards. These are blank Social Security cards that somebody produced on a color computer. We have one of our search warrants. We have samples of ODLs that have been printed up on a color computer. The technology is out there where people can produce a very high quality ID card. Now, DMV has been working very diligently with Digimarc to produce a more secure driver's license. And one of our concerns is the security of the driver's license is all well and good, but it's the process of how the driver's license are obtained. Here's a sample right here. This young man received a driver's license in 2000. This is an official Oregon DMV ID card that was issued in 2004 under a different name, different address. The problem being here is that DMV issued him a driver's license under this name, in which he suspended for drunk driving, getting out on the road, hurting, maiming, killing people. And here he has another ID card that's issued by DMV. Had the security procedures of having a biometric system been in place, this ID card would not have been issued. This is what we're concerned about, is the process on which the ID cards are issued. I know that there were several questions of the problems with the issuance of ID cards and driver's licenses, such as the benefits that you get from it. You can open up bank accounts. You can obtain social services, obtain utilities. Some of the things that people don't really venture out into is you can also register as a voter in this state under a fake name on a fake address. You can also go and purchase firearms. An ID card allows you transport access to air travel, and it allows you access to government buildings. These are just some of the benefits that people get just having a piece of plastic with their picture and their name on it. Now, we have demonstrated in your packet, you'll see that there's one individual that has numerous different IDs under different names, different addresses. Five of those, if you can read the really fine print, five of those were obtained on the very same day. The only thing he did was change his shirt. Now, that means he can get he can have access to all of those things I mentioned under five different names. He can also establish bank accounts where he can start stealing and weeding people's funds out of their bank accounts into his own, and then ruining the credit history or the lives of numerous people. This goes beyond just law enforcement. This goes into the community where people have to work very hard to reestablish their credit rating, their credit history. It takes an average of 600 hours, and if you put it in a work week, that means 4 months working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, to reestablish your credit history. It also costs an average between $1,500 and $1,700 of your individual money just to try and reestablish your credit history and your good name. So it reaches out to a lot of people. In the unit that I work with at RESIC, we take in an average of 1,900 fraud and ID theft cases a month. 1,900.
A month?
A month. We have five investigators. That means that I can only assign out 1% of those cases, and usually we concentrate on the vulnerable population, prolific offenders, multiple jurisdictions. But we're only able to assign 1% of all those cases for those members that are part of RESIC, and it's appalling. One of the questions is why should DMV employees fingerprint access their computers? It's a security feature. With a login name and a password, if they're easy to find out, all that I'd have to do is sit down at a computer workstation if I found out your login name and password, and I'm in the system. However, if you have a fingerprint scan that would automatically log you on into the system, unless I have your finger, I can't get into the computer no matter how many passwords I know. So it's an added security feature primarily, but it also adds the feature of attaching the employee's identity to each transaction that is done at their workstation. I know that the DMV does have an audit system in place, and they do attach the employee's ID to each transaction. This is just another added feature to help on that. One of the other questions is why shouldn't we wait for the federal government? Well, if we wait and see what happens, if we don't take any action, we could be waiting for quite a while. There were several issues that we were hoping to get addressed by the federal government through RESIC. However, with things changing, ever evolving, we've been pushed to the back burner three different times. So is the federal government standardization of an ID card going to come to fruition? And if it is, when? We know that the technology is out there where we can have an impact now. We can be one of the plank owners, if you will, of a new system on a secure driver's license and identification card. The only biometrics that are in place right now, if you can consider them biometrics, are digital photos and a signature. Signatures can be emulated. Digital photos don't tell you anything unless there's some measurement data attached to them. I was pleasantly made aware yesterday that these digital photos can be converted into measurement data, which is very good news. However, the only other biometrics there are your fingerprints, your DNA, or retinal scan. Now, a retinal scan is a little far off into the future to be very reliable for this purpose, and we don't want DMV employees to take DNA swabs of people coming in for a driver's license, but a fingerprint, you leave your fingerprints on everything. The cup you just picked up has your fingerprints on it now. Fingerprints are unique to each individual, and they're yours, and you leave your fingerprints everywhere. The Social Security number that you have, that 9-digit number that you give up, can do more damage to your credit history than your fingerprint can. I can find out your Social Security number. I can create my own identity. I can set up bank accounts. I can get mortgages, bank loans, car loans, set up utilities, and ruin you with just that 9-digit number. However, I can't do any of that with a fingerprint because I don't have it. I don't have your fingerprint unless I, detach it from.
Lieutenant, let me go back to something you just said, that the measurements can be added to, in other words, the base that the DMV has today. They could actually just add the measurements to the faces.
If I understood the conversation that we had with Ms. Youngs yesterday, there is software that's available to add the measurements to the current database. There'd probably have to be additional software and hardware that might have to be added, but the capability is there, and that was very pleasing to hear.
Continue on. I'm sorry, I just didn't want to think I had missed that.
No, okay. Localities that do not accept Oregon driver's license is an adequate form of identification. With RESIC, we have numerous board meetings, and we call in other agencies and such as inspector generals from different federal agencies. We call in people from Mr. Bradbury from the District Attorneys Association. We have numerous people from the private sector, the banking industry. And it was curious to hear from an IRS inspector general at one of our meetings, says that when he was working in Kansas City, that when somebody presented an Oregon ID card or driver's license, that secondary ID was requested because they couldn't trust the ID card. Mm-hmm. So this is the type of reputation that unfortunately our state has run into. By making our driver's license and ID cards more secure by implementing a biometric system, it'll raise our reputation. We'll set the national standard, or we'll be part of the national standard. There are only 6 other states, I think, around the country right now that collect fingerprint data or biometric data. We could be number 7. In your packet, you'll also see that there is an individual that has numerous driver's licenses or ID cards. Just as a demonstration of the system that we're proposing, there are 2 different systems. There's the one-to-one match or one-to-many match. There is a centralized issuance, and then there's also the immediate gratification of customer service receiving it at the DMV office right then and there. At this point in time, where our DMV is at, we would have to go to central issuance in the beginning because the biometric data, biometric fingerprint data is not in a database, so we would have to start collecting that and establishing our database. So there would have to be a central issuance in the beginning. But as the database grows, as people go in to renew their driver's license, get an endorsement or replacement for a lost ID card or destroyed driver's license, their fingerprints will then be in the system. Hence, they can do a one-to-one search, and we'd have the instant gratification then. It will take several years to reach a point, and we would never get rid of a central issuance because there are people that are coming to the state or growing up through childhood and into adolescence that want to get their driver's license that have never submitted their biometrics to DMV. So there will be a central issuance needed for into the future also. But we can trim it down into a better customer service once we have the databases populated. The individual that has 6 different IDs in there, He may go in. He's only in the database with his photographs right now. We don't have any biometric data, any measurements affixed to him. Say he takes his first driver's license into the DMV to get it renewed. There would have to be a central issuance waiting period for him to for the biometric data to be entered into the database and to try and double check who he is. Now, if you can't find out who he is, at least we have his biometric data attached to a specific name. Then if he goes in and tries to renew driver's license number 2 or number 3, we don't have the biometric data in the system for number 2 or number 3, so there would be the central issuance waiting period. During that waiting period, his biometric data would match up with the biometric data attached to driver's license 1. Number 2 and number 3 wouldn't be issued. So what we're looking at, he may have the one false ID, but he won't have 6, 8, 13 false IDs. And that's what makes law enforcement's job really hard, is that we're dealing with one individual that can be spread statewide up and down the I-5 corridor from Seattle to Medford. In this case, if we can limit it to one, at least we could narrow his activity and we could better identify who he is and stop this growing trend of identity theft.
We'll move on and we'll wait until all of you have finished, and then I'm sure the panel will have some questions for you. All right.
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Raul Ramirez, Marion County Sheriff. Been with the Sheriff's Office for 30 years, similar to Chief Kanzer. Seeing the epidemic of meth and its impact on our communities, particularly around meth identity theft, we're here before you providing not only this testimony, but myself in support of 640. I'm also a board member of RECIT, and it was shared that RECIT is a regional economic crime investigation center, which is a partnership of the public safety community and the banking industry. We have a serious problem with victimization not only occurring to Oregonians, but the business community is being devastated. And we have an opportunity here to elevate security enhancements to our issuance of driver's license, ID cards within the state of Oregon. What you have in your packet is another example. This particular individual, he was arrested last month as on a heroin case. You have his initial issuance of a driver's license back in 2000. I've got a 2-page driving record, which means that he was ultimately suspended in 2004. 2004, he goes in and applies for another driver's license using another name, and that particular driver's license is valid. Again, he's escalated from being irresponsible not only with his driving record, but within the criminal activity. This case is pending, but I just wanted to show you an example of case by case as we go across the state where identity theft is not only a law enforcement concern, but also a concern for residents that are being victimized. You've heard testimony with regards to we don't have a system that allows us to cross-reference when an individual applies for either a driver's license, an ID card, etc. Cross-referencing facial recognition or a thumbprint, fingerprint. In our meeting with DMV, my understanding is they have a database of 6 million, and correct me here, I think that's the number I heard, 6 million photographs of individuals that are currently in the DMV system. Here's the issue for me. Technology is out there that, as I understand it, to reformat the existing photographs that we have to be able to tell us, besides the ones that we've been able to identify this individual through the technology, reformat those 6 million photographs and start flushing out those that have multiple driver's licenses, ID cards. These individuals are damaging Oregon, victimizing Oregon. So I think that this is an opportunity for us to continue to raise the bar. That capacity and ability, and DMV can speak to that, is here. I know that that would be a fiscal impact, but we've got to start addressing this problem now. The issue of when will the federal government establish some standards, we can't wait for the federal government. Yes, we'll need to communicate and coordinate with them, but the issue is the victimization is occurring now. It will occur tomorrow, and the sooner we can get started on this within a reasonable time frame, the less victimization that will occur in Oregon. I can't emphasize that enough. Victimization, you, I, everyone in the state, the business community is getting devastated. And you'll hear testimony from them. So I'll stop there and allow the district attorney to share his comments.
All right, if you'll move that microphone down for him, oh, that would be... Oh, you have one of those court bosses, I see. All right.
Madam Chair, just real quickly, I have here some IDs that were produced, reproduced driver's licenses using equipment seized from criminals that were out they're reproducing this for identity theft, but I also had some reproduced, and these are props.
I figured he was. I'm looking at my picture
For the committee, and again, I'm not going to give these to you because they're props and they will be destroyed. Because again, that you know, that
thank
would be,
you, I appreciate that.
They will be destroyed, but I have a copy for each one of you, and again, trying to make a point as a prop that how easy it is. Your data was in the data that we seized from these individuals, criminals, that as I described them.
I'm sure.
So, thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. I am Bradbury. I'm the Yamhill County District Attorney. I come from a relatively medium-sized jurisdiction, but I am immediate past president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and I chair currently the legislative committee for the District Attorneys Association. At first blush, I think Senate Bill 640 looks like an identity theft bill, and in fact, I'm going to talk about that and how important it is related to that, but I would suggest to you that it, as much as anything, is a methamphetamine bill. My guess is that currently in this building, probably 90% of legislators are signed on to one or more bills dealing with methamphetamine, with cooking it, with delivering it, with using it, and all the associated problems. And when I'm talking in the trenches now, in the cases that we see, identity theft is the fuel for methamphetamine. To purchase it, to purchase the chemicals for it, and it is now the street crime. What used to be car clouts and burglaries and things like that to feed drug crimes, now it is identity theft. And it goes everywhere from the stuff we deal with day in and day out of checks, falsified checks, forged checks, to mail theft, and in particular what we're talking about here with identity theft and the creation of fake driver's licenses. In Oregon, unfortunately, it is all too easy to create a driver's license, and you can become anyone. You become anyone because your picture is incorporated onto a document that is accepted universally in the state and around the country with your picture and somebody else's identification or identifiers on it. And it goes from the amateur hour, I would suggest, and I've got some, these are actual items seized in cases out of Yamhill County, where I say amateur hour because they'll take driver's licenses and acid wash them or scrape off information that's on it. And then with a home PC, create on a laminate the information there that is then just stuck onto the card. And it's easy enough to take somebody else's picture and put it in behind it for that. So that's the amateur hour. With a printout on the back, it looks just like it is. It's been made from a stolen or a lost driver's license and now becomes me and now has my information on it. I know the state in the past had utilized the gold seal for the purposes of increasing security, and I know there are changes that DMV has in place today. We have literally found, we have seized rolls of the seals that were used to laminate for security on these cards. And these are from what I would say rank amateurs. The typical drug bust will go in and off in the corner as a PC and all kinds of stuff they're creating to match up with some checks they've made, now with ID they made, and they're good to go until they're ultimately caught. There is the more proficient, I would say the more professional ID thief who will, through either DMV employees or stolen databases, get information from which they can make themselves any of us. And I promise you, nobody is secure. We have law enforcement here who have created these props for you to see how easily it's done. But it goes beyond that. One, the machines used to make the driver's licenses in this state, and we're not alone, alone, but those cards, they can be purchased on the internet. You can purchase those machines. Once you have the cards and the size, they can create anything on that. Out of this is a disc made of stuff seized from a case out of the city of Newburgh, and one of the templates on this is a DMV. I've blown this up so you can see. It is the exact template used by DMV for the purposes of creating a driver's license, and is then put onto a card along with their picture and whatever data they want. I have, and I'm happy to show these to you. These are falsified driver's licenses, and at least on one of them, I know the officer who looked at it as I was getting it out of evidence said, you know, I would have taken that card. That's how good these cards are, front and back, and you're more than welcome to look at these. The point being that the technology is out there for the bad guys, and we need to stay ahead of them. We need to be sure that we're staying ahead of them. We've talked about the creation of the fake driver's licenses. The other part of this bill, though, deals with DMV and ensuring within DMV that we know who is creating a particular document. In Yamhill County, and I'm going to pick on my county, we prosecuted a Veronica Perez working out of the McMinnville DMV office who created some, we know of, over 200 driver's licenses without ever getting any identification. She did receive something, $200 to $400 per driver's license she got for the purposes of creating driver's licenses. And we are not the only county in the state that have had that type of problem. I think DMV is made up of wholly 99.8% of their people are perfectly honest individuals. Mm-hmm. But it only takes one to wreak havoc. And our ability to track that individual to a particular transaction is very important from the purposes of law enforcement. Now, we have the requiring of a print versus a password. I can assure you that in my office, I could probably get into the computer of all 25 of my employees within an hour just by walking around the office. A password, in my opinion, will not cut it. We need something more that is totally identified to a particular individual. Now, the other thing, and it isn't particularly addressed by the bill, other than we know who has access to this, is the overall DMV databases themselves. And why do we care about that? I mean, if I want my picture, I can make up anybody I want. Well, what in fact happens with the bad guys is they take real people, and they take it from databases. This particular CD, and you probably can't see it from there, it says on it, Def Leppard, Van Halen, AC/DC, looks like a homemade CD, and in fact contains the 1998, 99, and 2000 DMV databases on it. Those databases include information about, you'd be surprised how many people, but you can see here, this is an unzipped file, and the bolded mark there is me. That's where I lived in 1996, where I rented a house, and the last one that I found on this. It isn't just me, though, that they can find. The 2002 database is included on that first CD that I showed you, which has been stolen or purchased somehow out of DMV. And out of that database, actually the first one I mentioned, the 98, I've got Senator Courtney's home address. I have the governor's home address. Craig Campbell mentioned he never did know what the governor's middle name was until I showed him this. And Senator Berger, that's yours. That's off of the 2002 DMV database. My point being that overall we need to be looking at more secure ways to maintain this information, and most of all from what we're talking about today, a way of creating valid identification for the citizens of Oregon that we can all count on. That isn't one of 15 licenses that somebody applies for, because we all lose. We all lose on the potential of having our identity stolen, and we all lose by the mess that methamphetamine is creating in our communities.
Thank you very much for your testimony. One of the first times that I heard about false ID was when young people were trying to buy alcohol, and that seemed to be kind of a fad thing, that you'd get ID and they'd have one other card other than their own. But you know, I know that it affects drugs, and I want to make a comment on that. But when I heard that Mr. Colby, who just killed the child down in Florida, had been hired at a school as a janitor, I don't know the details, but I would suspect he had some false ID or a stolen identity from someone. I don't think that they checked his criminal background and hired him. I think he probably didn't go by his real name. One of the things that really discourages me about the drug scene is that we have spent so much money through the marijuana and heroin eras, and now we are with meth. And yet there is some reason that our young people will use methamphetamine. And I think there's that's a topic for another day, but why people would be tempted to do it. And in the case of marijuana and heroin, as you know, people become lethargic and happy and kind of, you know, at peace and go to sleep. With meth, we have a whole different kind of personality to deal with, which is very, very frightening. And so I don't know where the answer is. I will play the devil's advocate with you and tell you that every time we talk about any kind of identity, we have people that think government is trying to watch them. It's Big Brother. And you just want to know more and more about people and this kind of thing. So those are the kind of arguments that we get when we have this conversation. I'd like to open it to questions if anyone has any. All right, Senator Prasansky is recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No one's really explained to me, or I haven't heard it. How's this going to work? I mean, it sounds to me what we're talking about is trying to fortify how driver's licenses are actually being issued. Can someone just walk us through someone coming in the door under this? If this was in law, what would happen?
Chair Berger and Senator Prasansky, the way that the system would work is at the very beginning when the system is established, we would be looking at a central issuance system because we don't have the database populated with any of the biometrics. What that would do is when you first go in to get your driver's license, or in our cases to go into for a renewal or a change of address, we would be inserted into this central issuance where our biometrics would then populate the database.
Walk me through that. I mean, I share biometrics. I mean, I'm going to walk in. I need to get my license. It expires next month. I walk in there and say, hey, here's my form. And then walk me through what's going to happen.
Well, the software and hardware that's available, there will be scanning machines where you can just place your finger onto a scanner or your thumbprint, whichever the digit that is going to be established. You just place it on a scanner, and the computer system reads your fingerprint. There's systems that have self-guided plantons that would ensure that the fingerprint goes into in a certain direction, where the data can be collected in a uniform way. You would have it just now when you submit your paperwork, and then you go in and you sit down for your photograph. That's at the time you would have your facial features measured. Is just as simple as your photograph being taken.
What does that mean? You say facial. I mean, we're going
to. Well, the computer system adds a numerical measurements and data to your facial features. The distance between your eyes and the length of your nose, et cetera.
That's all in a software program.
It's all in a software program. And it's just as simple as sitting down and just sitting still so they can take your picture with the camera, which is what you do now. The fingerprint scan is just a small little scanner that you just place your finger on. The computer will scan it. The employee, of course, would need to learn which is acceptable or unacceptable as a fingerprint, such as obtaining the core of the fingerprint. So there would be some training with the employees where the employee can have the individual put their finger on the scanner. It'll pull up the image. The employee can either hit reject or accept, depending on the quality of the fingerprint image that they're seeing on the computer screen. And once they hit accept, then that information goes into the database. Now, once that information is in the databases, then since your biometrics were never in the database to start with, we couldn't do a one-to-one search because you're not in there to search against your own fingerprint. So there would be a one-to-many search, and that takes time. That's what causes the central issuance and the delay in receiving a driver's license immediately. You could obtain a temporary permit on a big piece of paper that says that this is good for 2 or 3 weeks while your identity is being processed. And then you'll receive your card in the mail. Now, when you go in for a renewal, say you move next year and you need to change your address, you go into the DMV office and you fill out your forms, and you'll have to submit your fingerprint again. Well, once you submit your fingerprint, we can do the one-to-one match. Your data is in the database. We could match your fingerprint that you put on a scanner to the fingerprint that's in the database. We can say, yes, the computer will say, yes, this matches. There you go. You have your driver's license with a new your new address on it. It prevents somebody, it would prevent somebody with multiple IDs from coming in and obtaining multiple IDs over again, because that fingerprint will be attached to one person's identity. So that's pretty much how the system would work.
So really, the mailing part is extremely important.
It is.
That takes care of one part of a big problem, where people are giving you a false address.
Madam Chair, that's like I explained to you in Milwaukee right now with prosecuting through the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office, a subject who was cited and eventually his license was suspended because he failed to appear. He was rearrested on that failure to appear, came to court, and presented a statement, a sworn statement, that said that he never lived at the address and thus he never got notification that he was suspended, which is one of the requirements for the notification for being a suspended driver.
Right.
And he'd never lived there, but yet he had used that address. Now, had we mailed that driver's license to that address and he wasn't there, it would have been returned to DMV. DMV could have then said, we want to hold this for some future investigation. His temporary would have expired after 21 days or 15 days, whatever the process would take. His temporary would expire. He'd go in to try to find out what was going on with his driver's license and say, well, you don't live where you say you live. So where do you really live? So it gives some verification to the residence requirement that is currently part of the statute that DMV operates under.
Chief, are you ever just tempted to tell people it'd be just a lot easier to tell the truth in life and life could be a lot simpler?
Every day we tell them that. Absolutely the truth.
I mean, it would be a lot simpler just to tell it the way it is. Well, I thank you. I'm going to get you to step back now, and I'm going to ask Mike Dewey to come forward and talk to us a little bit about Digimark.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm going to have some people to join you. You don't mind, do you?
Not at all.
All right. I'm going to ask Pam Levitt. And someone with her. All right. A guest with her to come up. Good. All right. Thank you very much.
This lady is from Rogue Valley, and you might want to have her go first, if you don't mind. She
that would be very nice.
Back to
you. See, chivalry is not dead. Very good. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Davis. I'm the Special Services Manager at Rogue Federal Credit Union out of Medford, Oregon, which is a nice name for collection manager. We deal with a lot of fraud down there and a lot of identity theft. And some of the things that we're seeing, I'm a member of the Southern Oregon Fraud and Security Team, which is an agency that includes banks, credit unions, and law enforcement. And several years ago, we decided that we wanted to see how easy it was to get ID off the Internet, and ended up getting a fake Oregon driver's license off the Internet in about a week. And that was coming out of Canada. There's lots of areas that identification can be received from or obtained, and the DMV is one of them. We deal with situations. I can tell you of several. We had a lady who came through town, established herself at a rental, came in, had a very glowing credit report, received a car loan from us. We're all happy to give her a car loan.
Yeah, I wish it was for my business. Maybe not. No.
Yeah, I don't think you'd want her, though. About a week and a half later, I was called by a mortgage broker, and she was trying to purchase a home. And she said, I think some things are looking bad here. And we sat down and looked at everything, and lo and behold, she had established a new identity, new credit report, new everything from a deceased person in California. A lot of this information can be obtained off the Internet. But the fake ID issue is at the heart of identity theft, and it's in the heart of meth use. When we repossess cars, one of the first things we look for is the drugs. And there's lots of times I repossessed a rural mail carrier and cleaning out her car, ran into drugs, and found out she'd been opening up mail along the way, too. So lots of situations. I deal with teachers in our community where and professionals where we've had cell phone service started up in their name. They didn't do it. Credit cards have been started up in their name. They haven't done it. I work with teens where their parents are using their social security numbers and driver's license information to establish utilities and get into rentals, ruin their credit. So working with a lot of young people right now on identity theft coming from their own family members. Internet fraud right now is huge in getting this information because over the internet I can get a birth certificate, a death certificate, I can get all kinds of things and then go from there and go to the DMV with it. So lots of ways to obtain this information. I know that one of the things that we're proactive in is getting the education piece out there. And we need to educate not only our communities, whether they're members or non-members, but we also need to educate loss prevention with our merchants on what to look for when they're looking at ID. Is it valid? What are the security features? Really looking at it. And we make a real proactive stance on that. And I think that through education and some of these measures that are coming up, that's how we're going to prevent it. Is it going to stop everything? Probably not. But this is a huge step in looking at some of the ways that we can tighten things up to make it tougher. The theory behind that is if you make it tougher, they're going to go to the easier places, and then we got to go there and tighten it up. So this is a first step. So I would encourage all of you to take a look at this and support it. So thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. You have our written testimony. Carrie actually gives a much better summary of what's going on out there. Identity theft is a huge problem for our members, and I gave you some overall statistics nationally and also in Oregon. We participate on the Financial Institution Security Task Force along with law enforcement and the banks to talk about these issues. One statistic that I heard related to my identity theft and meth was 90% of the robberies in the Portland metropolitan area are all related to methamphetamine habits, trying to get money for that. And so it's obviously a big problem. I gave you some information about the U.S. Patriot Act that requires financial institutions to do their best to find out the identity of a person, and we use the driver's license. And Carrie was telling me earlier how they're getting more difficult to distinguish between those that are false. And so we think the goals of this bill are wonderful. We're looking at any legislation that does go after this, and as I said, my written testimony outlines the identity theft issue for credit unions in Oregon. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I want to thank someone. Did you bring
this? We developed
that.
It's a brochure.
I really appreciate that. And I think my next question is, do people from the local credit unions go to businesses? For instance, I don't think we have ever had anyone come to our business and talk to our employees about this. I just quickly reading through your list, I can see some things that, you know, you just don't think about.
Yeah.
Like how many credit cards you carry. You know, most of us just carry every credit card
Absolutely.
We have.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't even use mine. So I just carry them around.
Yeah.
But I'll quit doing that.
Yeah. So. Madam Chair, we do. We have open seminars. We actually have 3 or 4 this year for the community as a whole that can attend. And we also do loss prevention workshops for merchants through SOFAS. And we have day-long seminars on how to prevent fraud, what to look for, identity theft, looking at identification as a whole. And so we do go out there on the education piece, because if you can kind of get people educated as to how to prevent it and how to stop it and kind of how to protect their personal information, it makes it just that much tougher for criminals and to get into them.
Madam Chair, the credit union in your community will be contacting you shortly to establish a time to come and train your employees.
That would be
but
wonderful.
But we do it statewide.
I think the education piece is extremely important, and I would definitely appreciate it. I think our employees would appreciate it too, as well. All right, questions for? All right, Senator Krasinski, before we let these people go, Mike, and we'll get to you.
No problem.
How are you going to use the DL, the driver's license, when it comes to you, the new ones? I mean, what differences is it going to make? Is it just that it has the enhanced security, or is there some way that you're going to be able to access the data embedded?
Well, I think from a credit union standpoint, a financial institution, it's important to us to know that when we're opening an account, that we're actually opening an account for the person that's sitting in front of us. And any kind of enhanced security measures, when because we ask for several types of ID, with a driver's license being one of the major pieces of ID that we ask for. But with those enhancements on it, it kind of helps us ensure that we are talking to who we're talking to, along with the secondary pieces of ID that we can ask for. The more that we know that someone can't get out there and have 3, 4, 6, 12 IDs makes our jobs a lot easier. We all have, even because we open accounts with people from ID from other states, we have a book that has all of the security features, so we can double check on the security features of that ID. But I think for us, it would give us a little sense of comfort knowing that there is some security measures in place at the DMV in Oregon.
Madam Chair, if I can follow up.
Yes, follow up.
Do you check when you have someone come in wanting to open an account with DMV to determine the information that's on that ID that's being presented to you is in their system?
One of the things that we look at and we try to train our staffs on is to look not only at the issuance date, look to see in relationship to the age of the person, date of birth. You know, if I see somebody that's just got a new driver's license, I may call up Oregon DMV and verify some information, because if you're looking at somebody who's, say, 30s, 40s, and they just got a driver's license just issued, that would raise a flag with me. So there are some flags that we look for as far as the issuance of ID and the age of the person in front of us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you have a drive, you need to be excused.
Thank you.
All right. Mike, welcome, and thank you for allowing them to go first.
It's my pleasure. I was going to take about 40 minutes, so I think that works out pretty well. For the record, it's Mike Dewey representing Digimark. Digimark is an Oregon company, and they operate with DMVs across the United States. They provide the driver's license features to 32 of the states, plus the District of Columbia. We are here as a resource for this particular committee. The expert that I would have brought to you today thought it would be a little bit more important to take his children on spring break and not come back from Mexico for this hearing, so I think you can understand that. Digimark provides about 60 million IDs annually, so they are, if you will, the largest in the world, so we have a tremendous expertise. We recognize there is a significant problem nationally in Oregon with identity theft and with meth situations. I did want to say that I believe the contract that we have with DMV expires on September 1, 2008, so we've just basically started the new contract. And we have some issues about whether or not this goes outside of the scope of our present contract. And DMV can talk to that, but there are some legal issues there, but I'm sure those can be resolved. One of the issues that we have is that we had capital cost as we ramp up to provide the new features in the driver's license that you get today, because they're new features from the previous contract that we had. So we have those capital costs that clearly we want to recoup. And so it would be difficult for us, as if we were to open up a new contract, and we might not get that contract if it was an RFP type of situation. We can provide all of the features that are recommended here, whatever the committee would like, DMV, the Department of Transportation. For example, in Colorado, that's a state where we provide the driver's license, we have facial recognition, which we talked about today, and I'm not going to go into that, but also fingerprinting, and that has been useful in the state of Colorado. But what I want to let you know is that we do have a concern, if this bill passes, as to whether or not we can continue doing business in this state.
and those are some issues. For example, there was a bill that was going to be heard today, House Bill 2609, that dealt with putting on the driver's license the color of the eye or eyes. And that is not really a problem in the sense that it would be some work that we'd have to do with DMV, some changes in the feature on the card, in some software, but that would arguably would be within the scope of the contract. But again, I'm not sure whether or not this change would be, so that is something that needs to be discussed. There are, as you've heard, a number of issues that you still have to talk about. And it may be that you would want to punt those to some other entities, DMV and the Department of Transportation. But it does, you need to talk about, is it going to be over-the-counter or central issuance, the mail side of it. And mail does make sense if you're looking at identity theft. That is one way of doing that. Is it going to be one-to-one? Or are you going to have one-to-many? And if it's one-to-many, that's a little bit more expensive. I did notice in the amendments it said not up to $2, and I'm not an expert here to know what the additional cost would be, but we want to be sure that we had a number that was a correct number. Now, I think that's based on the experience in Oklahoma, and part of that deals with how many cards you have in economies of scale. My message for you today is that we're a resource. We have people that do this every day. They know what they're doing. And we will work with you and the other parties, but we do want to be included if this bill plans on moving forward. So with that, Madam Chair and members, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Questions? Senator Pazansky.
Thank you. My Digimart, what do they do? They provide blanks to DMV, or are they actually producing the finished product that then is distributed?
Madam Chair and Senator, this would be my understanding. Basically, let me go first that with these kinds of contracts, there is an RFP first, and the department says, this is what we would like to have. Tell us what you can do, what the architecture would look like, and what the price is going to be. And then there are a number of factors that are judged. And Digimark, and prior to that is Polaroid, and Digimark purchased a division of Polaroid, the ID division, of maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Basically, they provide the architecture, the software, the materials. It would be the laminate, the cards, the printers, the software for the storage capabilities, and then who owns that is a question within the contract. But basically, they are the vendor, and they're the entity that makes sure that the system works. And the reason you have this, and you do these bids every maybe it's 6 years or 8 years, depending on the situation, is you don't want the state to be in the business and be behind the curve technologically and have to make investments that they may not choose to make. So it's prudent to get the best deal you can in the private sector, and there is competition in the private sector. So the printers, the storage, the cards, the laminate, all of that is purchased, and then of course there are people who are available to fix whatever needs to be fixed within the system.
When you say storage, what do you mean storage?
Oh, this would be for the software for the storage of the photos, for example. And then if you're going to do facial recognition, then you're going to have to go further as opposed to just bringing somebody's photo up, your photo, for example, or having the capability software-wise and the hardware to be able to compare your photo to other photos that might be similar. And that's what they do in Colorado.
All right. So, Madam Chair, if I can, what I'm hearing is that the vendor, whoever that is, would have access to this database. They would actually retain and maintain this database.
I'm not, Madam Chair and Senator. I know that the department can speak.
Okay.
They're more qualified to speak to that. We're the entity that makes it work. The contract is basically going to say who has access to that. But clearly, the individual that works for DMV has it because they're going to be the entity that is going to take a look at the files. And they have experts, for example, in looking at the material from Colorado, individuals that can look at a number of different photos to see if we're talking about the same person or different people.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. We have, I'm sorry, Senator Starr.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mike, just just to boil it down, Digimarc's concern is they got a contract and they don't want us to pass a bill that would cause a problem with that contract, number one.
Madam Chair and Senator Starr, yes, we have a contract that expires, I believe, September 1 of 2008. We've been in this contract for about a year or so, and we've made the capital cost to invest in it, knowing we're going to have it for this period of time.
Right.
We issue about 800,000 cards per year, so arguably, because of your capital cost, you're not going to do as well in the first part as opposed to the last few years.
Okay, and one more follow-up.
Sure, follow-up.
Is, currently, obviously, we have the digital photographs. Does Digimarc have the technological capacity with, you know, whatever upgrades are necessary to for us to do a scan when somebody comes in and wants to get another driver's license to do a scan, whether, you know, one-to-one or one-to-many, but can is that technology available today? Can Digimarc provide that to the department today?
Madam Chair and Senator Starr, my belief is that that is a, I mean, that is something that they can provide. If the department wanted that, obviously there is, in all of this, there is a cost component.
Mm-hmm.
But they are state-of-the-art. There's no question about that.
Great, thank you.
And it's changing, as you know, rapidly, as everything does in the technology world.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mike. Andrea Meyer? And Tom Perrick is next. Afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Verger, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. We do oppose Senate Bill 640 requiring two additional forms of biometric data from a person seeking a driver's license, permit, or identification card. This is a frightening expansion of government databasing of personal identifying biometric information. This proposal would allow DMV to collect two new additional forms of biometric information on every Oregonian who obtains or renews a driver's license, and it would allow release of this information to law enforcement without even a subpoena. This would allow the government to build an unprecedented database on all of us. New technologies have turned science fiction stories into real-world possibilities. Developments in digital video, biometrics, image scanning, voice recognition, retina scans, and DNA provide the government with new ways to search for individuals and collect vast database of information on law-abiding Oregonians. Indeed, since DNA is one of the biometric datas, this law would allow DMV to collect a DNA swab on every Oregonian. Granted, I've not heard testimony that that's what they want, but the bill would allow this. This is, and much of this, is an incredible invasion of our personal privacy and liberty. Currently, facial recognition software theoretically allows computers to process images fast enough to match every Oregonian twice per second. That means if Senate Bill 640's biometric database became a reality and local jurisdictions started using cameras in public places as they do elsewhere in the country, the government could literally observe and track every one of us in the state. The technology available to utilize these additional biometric data points is still crude in its technology and accuracy. A facial recognition system at the airport in Palm Beach, Florida, failed to match airport employees. And it also suffered from too many false positives, false accusations against the wrong person, and as many as 10% positive hits in facial recognition software were incorrect. Because of the earlier testimony, I wanted to reference an ACLU piece that was done on a Q&A on facial recognition. And it also went on to describe that government studies on facial recognition software have found high rates of both false positives, wrongfully matching innocent people with photos in the database, and false negatives, not catching people even when their photo is in the database. One problem is that unlike our fingerprints or irises, our faces do not stay the same over time. These systems are easily tripped by the changes in hairstyle, facial hair, or body weight, by simple disguises, and by effects of aging. A study by the government's National Institute of Standards and Technology, for example, found false negative rates for face recognition verification of 43% using photos of subjects taken just 18 months earlier. And those photos that were taken in perfect condition actions. Significant because facial recognition software is terrible at handling changes in lighting and camera angle or images with busy backgrounds. And you heard discussion that this would be set up in a uniform way, but you have human handling errors that can arise. The NIST study also found that a change of 45 degrees in the camera's angle rendered the software useless. Similar results have been found in real-world face recognition trials. A study based on police documents obtained by the ACLU shows that face recognition system deployed on the streets of Tampa, Florida, failed to identify a single suspect from the database and had many false alarms. In addition, questions have been raised about how the software works on the skin color. And the darker the skin color is of a person, their features are less likely to appear clearly on the lenses. So there's technology that we still are far not advanced on in this area. Fingerprints. I simply will say that Brandon Mayfield still remains in Oregon, our prime example. His fingerprint was analyzed by the FBI, the leader in analyzing fingerprints, and it was wrong read. So as we start having this technology be used by others, we are very concerned. Error rates translate into difficulties for real people. Even if we have 99.9% accuracy rate, and documentations I've just discussed of this technology suggest that it's far lower than that, but out of 3.5 million population in the state, even a tiny error rate translates into, for example, 3,500 individuals adversely affected at 0.01. And at 1%, it's 35,000. Biometric technology is not the magic solution to the problem. There are always ways to beat the system. A few years ago, a German magazine tested several different biometrics, including facial recognition, fingerprint devices, and iris scans, and it was able to circumvent all of them. And as I mentioned...
Could you just kind of summarize for us this next session?
Sure. I'm almost done.
All right.
Madam Chair, thank you. I know the hour's late. We've all been waiting to testify on this, and I want to communicate this today. In this day and age, the same technology that allows us to collect the database of this type of sensitive information makes it also very difficult, if not impossible, to maintain the confidentiality of this information. And the financial costs associated with doing that are very high. In the last few months, there's been extensive media coverage on the release of personal information. ChoicePoint is the prime example. They are in the business of creating and then maintaining databases for private as well as public bodies. And they released over 152,000 electronic files containing financial and personal information that was stolen. And we only know this because California, the only state in the country, has a law that requires that they be notified of this. ChoicePoint, it's important to point out, represents not just private sector, but the government sector, including Homeland Security. And yet their system was infiltrated. March 9th of this year, LexisNexis also was exposed to theft of public records, including social security numbers and driver's license. And in Oregon, a man was arrested for illegally obtaining the 1997 records from Oregon DMV. Mr. Berry testified, in fact, that one DMV employee illegally provided driver's licenses to people. That employee will have access to this database. I think you get where I'm going. It's a high incentive for someone to sell and steal that information. And if employees have access to that, we're exposing risk of our personal information for even more use impermissibly. It's really quite appropriate to use the expression, if we build it, they will come. However, in this case, it's if we data collect it, someone will access it. The ACLU of Oregon urges this committee not to proceed with Senate Bill 640. It will not make us safer. Indeed, it will expose all of us to an unprecedented invasion by the government and put further at risk very sensitive and personal information about all of us for potential abuse and misuse. Thank you.
Andrea, do you think that we have much privacy now?
Chair Verger, members of the committee, less and less, but let's not give it all away. Mm-hmm. We have less and less privacy.
I don't find, of course, as public officials, we have very little. But I don't find the average citizen has a great amount of privacy. You can go into Google and find where anybody lives, and it'll give you a map and direct you to their house. So privacy has really been something that has been just left behind with the technology. The fact of being private and trying to protect us seems to me to be a different category. That's just my personal observation, that I can categorize those two things. one thing, and I think that you're speaking for a certain number of the population. I assure you, I know that, when you say that the government can then follow people around. I guess my question, and I mean this absolutely with no humor, why would they want to?
Senator Verger, indeed, if I can locate it, and I'm not sure I can put my hands on it right at this moment. There was one documentation that, I think it was the Detroit Free Press, had law enforcement had the cameras to follow people around, and the law enforcement was caught stalking women, getting information about friends, engaging in other illegal activities. You know, when we talk about privacy and the additional loss of it, I don't know, I personally still hold my fingerprints as something that I will not give out. My another very personal, my DNA swab. I take my utmost protections of that information, my iris scan and my photograph and things that and other parts that this biometric would require me to turn over to the government. It's one thing when I voluntarily, you know, might choose with a physician to give personal information. It's another when it's the government demanding that I give it over and then creating a database which can be used for abuse, not just by the government, but by others, which has happened.
I truly respect your right to have your opinion. That's the greatest thing about this country that there ever was, that you have that right to have a different opinion. But I do believe that our government helps you keep that. So we have to appreciate that.
Chairman.
All right, questions? No questions.
Thank
all right.
You for letting
Thank
me
you.
Express my opinion here today. Thank
You're
you.
You're very welcome to always express your opinion. All right. Tom Perry? Well, Tom, we kept you a long time, didn't we?
That's okay, Senator. I appreciate it.
This has been a good discussion.
It has been a good discussion, and I appreciate the opportunity, Chair Verger, members of the committee, to participate in today's hearing. I'm here to support Senate Bill 640 on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. For the record, my name is Tom Perrick. I'm President, Chief Executive Officer of the Oregon Bankers Association. We represent the interests of Oregon's commercial banks, savings and loans, and trust companies throughout the state. As you've already heard, and as I mentioned, in deference to the prior witnesses, I'll keep my comments brief. However, I will point out a couple of additional items. And as you've already heard, our businesses and therefore our communities and our citizens nationally are losing some $50 billion, with a B, $50 billion a year in fraud losses from all sources. On average, our families, our friends, our neighbors are spending some 30 to 60 hours on average, those that are victims of identity theft, and clearing up their good names. In addition to that, estimates put the loss of time and actual money in trying to rectify identity theft cases by individuals at some $500 hard cost to these victims. That does not count the countless hours of the personal bankers across the state that invest with their customers and with our customers in order to help them rectify their identity theft situations. Closer to home, in part of your packet presented earlier, a little over 3,000 of our Oregon neighbors reported some form of identity theft last year. And unfortunately, as already been pointed out, the vast majority of those identity theft losses are the result of street-level drug crime, meth in particular. So we applaud the legislature, the members of Oregon's congressional delegation as well, as you struggle and address this unfortunate issue of meth use and identity theft in our communities. I would point out that the Oregon Bankers Association has been part of RESIC, as you've heard before, the Regional Economic Crime Investigation Center, almost from day one. I serve at the pleasure of my board of directors on that board of directors as we seek to find a public and private sector solution to these identity theft problems. There's no shortage of other opportunities and options that I could commit my time and the banker's time to, but we feel it's that important for me to participate at that level on the RESIC board. Similarly, we've invested thousands of dollars, it's fair to say, in direct expenses associated with the RESIC work. We think it's that important, and we participate, as prior witnesses discussed from the Credit Union Association, with our joint financial institution task force. We cooperate jointly with the fraud and bank and credit union investigators with the RESIC investigator as well. There's also countless opportunities that we've pursued with public service announcements, particularly over the holidays, public campaigns, outreach throughout the state, all with meth use in the backdrop of identity theft. So we are here in support of Senate Bill 640. We urge your support. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today and address you today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tom, for being here today and witnessing for us. Are there any questions? If not, thank you again for the long wait, but that's the way it is sometimes in this building. All right, I will close the public hearing. Lorna Young, I almost cut you right off. You might want to have to digest some of this material. You've heard a lot of things.
Madam Chair, I certainly have. Lorna Young's the administrator of the Department of our Division of Motor Vehicles. I provided testimony for you that I'm not going to go over word by word because you've heard a lot today. I do want to clarify a couple of things and answer some questions that were posed earlier. We do recognize the importance of this issue, and we also recognize the limit to which the improvements that we have made in our current process can go to deal with the problem of identity theft. Since 2004, we've changed the process of issuance. We've tightened down on the documents. We've given our staff tools and training to recognize fraudulent documents. Two people handle the process. And, of course, you've seen the new card that we have, which contains many more security features in it than the previous card. It has a laminate that is fluorescent underlined. It's got different colors in it. So as a card that is easy to duplicate like this older one was, it's far more difficult. And what you heard today was a lot of testimony about false or the counterfeiting of ID cards. And I know you recognize that this bill won't deal with that issue. In fact, it may drive, as one potential possibility you'll have to consider is that as this card gets more and more secure, it would potentially drive people more towards trying to make counterfeit cards. But as we envision it, from what we've seen from the bill, I think it's correct to assume that we would need to move to a central issuance process. Currently, there does exist the technology to take the photos that we have in our database now, the photos that we take every time we take your driver license. And the reason that we have 6,000 photos is we keep old photos on file so that when you come back in, we see those changes. But there is, as was testified earlier, the technology, and Digimark is one of the many, there are several other vendors, that these current photos can be digitized so that they, or the facial recognition template be applied through software to these photos. I think it's cost about $1.5 million to get that software done. So you could start the process of a one-to-many match because you already have this in the database. You have those photos in the database. It is true that we would not have the fingerprints in the database, so that would take time. But the process would, if you truly want to stop the issuance of driver licenses and ID cards from and take advantage of what you already have in the database, then our recommendation would, if you want to move forward with this bill, is that we would move from a over-the-counter issuance to a central issuance state. And that may be something that, though I know there's been testimony earlier that you may want to move back to a combination or hybrid system. Those usually are more expensive systems. And with the federal legislation coming down, which may require additional checks, such as Social Security checks and others, it just may make sense to move to a central issuance approach so that you can do a number of checks. So how a central issuance process works is that, first of all, you show us your doc. So we wouldn't want to rely just on this. We'd still want to go through the screening to make sure that you're not walking in with fraudulent documents, because then we can stop you in your tracks right there. We would, as you pointed out, if the bill doesn't address a specific, and I'm assuming there would be amendments that tell you which of the biometrics, but the testimony you've heard is that two biometrics that are being considered is to take the photograph we already have on file and apply facial recognition technology to it. That is not as good as fingerprints. It does require human judgment. A one-to-one match is easier, but if you're trying to search out one to many in states that are using it, and they're using it as an overnight batch process, one to many, there's no technology that would allow you to do that in a real live situation. You still need an operator to go back and take a look at those 5, 6, or 7, or 8 photos that look like the person and make some decisions and do some investigation. States like Colorado that have pioneered facial recognition technology, that's the way they do that. Same with fingerprint. Now, I understand one-to-one match is pretty straightforward. One-to-many, I would have to explore how easy it is for individuals with what level of training is needed to make that. So our recommendation would be that to implement this system, you would certainly need to go to a central issuance, which quite a few states have done already. There was a question earlier regarding the database. About 2 years ago, DMV took over the storage of all the data that is collected. We did have a turnkey system, essentially, with the vendor before, where they supplied the software, they supplied the servers and the data, and the photos were stored on a server. We decided to retain the storage of the data, of the photos. The other information was always stored on our mainframe. So all the storage of all the data now currently rests on the Department of Transportation mainframe. And the technicians essentially have have access to the system to make it to work, but the data is a separate issue. There are a number of things in the language of the current bill that are unclear, but I understand that there are proposed amendments to address that. I assume that you'd want to take a look at that. But as it sits, where there's a specification of two forms of biometric for the employee logon, and we only know of one, fingerprint, I don't think that that's what the authors of the bill intend to move forward. And as the bill is currently written, it's not clear that you would do a verification upon original issuance, but I understand that is something that they are also being taken a look at in the proposed amendments. So I'm here to answer any other questions you might have about what the bill does or how it would change. But I can tell you that we discussed with our Attorney General in the contracting area what size of a change to a contract would occur before could you make under an existing contract, and when would you need to go out. And the kind of rule of thumb is, if you're changing the amount by 25% and making significant changes to what you're doing, such as moving from over the counter to central issuance, then I suspect that we would be very much looking at a new bid.
Well, I have just a couple of questions. One is, what is the punishment for an employee within your department to share information that is obviously confidential information, or share the data bank? What,
Madam Chair, if you are, we have a computer program in place that allows us to track any accessing of the database, so we can track it back to the employee. And if you are caught accessing information and using that information for personal gain, then that's grounds for termination.
And what about whistleblower program? You have is the environment conducive to an employee who knows that another employee has accessed information?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I'm not quite sure. Question.
Do you feel that there is an environment that if an employee of DMV knew that another employee was accessing the data bank, that they would feel comfortable in reporting that, the whistleblower?
Madam Chairman, yes. That there are a couple of bright lines at DMV. You don't mess with the data and you don't mess with the money. And I tell every new employee that in new employee orientation. And it's the expectation of, I mean, that's part of the culture, the protection of the database. And so, yes, we have instances where employees have come forward and said, shared their concerns, and we follow up and investigate.
And I'll reiterate what has already been said, that 99.9% of the people are doing their job and working very hard. But I always am disappointed when I hear that there's that 1% that actually took advantage of it. Okay, any questions of Lorna? Senator Prusansky.
Thank you. I understand from what you're saying on it that the access to the new database would be in-house only for DMV employees. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Prusansky, DMV records are accessible under the records law.
I'm going to ask you the next question. So what I remember back in the 90s when we had one of the exhibits about the, you could actually buy, go into the DMV, pay $75, $80, whatever it was, and get a complete set of everyone's DL information for marketing purposes. Can they still do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Prusansky, no. There have been a number of changes to the records law. Have there been enough? Probably, in my opinion, no. But the ability for direct marketers or bulk marketers to access the database is no longer available. But there are about 19 categories of individuals who can access information, lawyers, legitimate businesses, insurance industry, the auto industry can access your name, your driver license number, your address. They can request your driving record. There are certain things that are protected, Social Security number. Only law enforcement has access to your photo, and under this bill, only law enforcement would have access to the digitized photo as well as, to the, and the fingerprint as well. But other aspects of your personal information are available through the statutes for individuals that qualify under legitimate business purposes. And that's one of the areas which our records section, because we sell millions of records every year, is constantly on the lookout for, is individuals who are advertising on the internet driver license or driver records for sale to make sure to find out how do they obtain it, do they know anything about the privacy laws. But that is a very serious issue, and there is a proliferation of those older databases that have been copied and sold, and then there are the opportunities for individuals to fraudulently obtain databases from legitimate purveyors and then use them for misuse. So the issue of identity theft is broad and it's deep, and we're only here to provide information in terms of what this particular bill would do, but we also need to recognize that this bill is only part of the answer to the all of the issues surrounding identity theft.
Questions?
Yes. Senator Starr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lorna, for your testimony. Have you seen this?
The information from the
Coalition for a Secure Driver's License?
Yes, I have a copy of that.
Are you concerned at all that Oregon is at the bottom of that list in the red area? Does that concern you at all? It just seems to me that shows that a lot of states have done a lot to protect their citizens, and Oregon seems to be way behind.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, if you take a look at the criteria that are used for that, there are actually four different criteria that are being used to make up that score: legal presence, visa expiration, biometric data, Social Security number, whether it's mandatory or whether it's verified. And so of the list of states that have biometric data, was pointed out, there are only 9 of the 51 jurisdictions listed here that actually do collect biometric data. Oregon's score is not solely based on the fact that Oregon does not collect biometric data. Oregon's score is based on the fact that we do not require legal presence. We do not tie the expiration of any driver license to a visa because we don't require legal presence, and we don't require any Social Security number verification. So there's a range of issues that lead us to be at the bottom, the end of the score. And yes, it is a concern in relationship to driver license issuance. But I just wanted to explain where the scoring came from.
So you are concerned that Oregon is at the bottom as it relates to these list of criteria?
Yes, I'm concerned. But my concern is that the changing to biometrics is not going to address all of the issues, all these other issues.
Other bills that have been proposed and
yes,
building to do with some of these other issues. I have a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The issue of somebody walking, you know, yeah, there's a problem with people doing counterfeit driver's license. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But it seems to me that the issue that this bill is attempting to get to is the person that stole, you know, a piece of mail or stole mm-hmm. something, some personal identification somehow, some personal information, and the ability for them to walk into DMV using that and getting a new driver's license.
Yes, I understand.
There's no other alternative that I see other than this bill to prevent that. Isn't that the case?
To absolutely prevent it, no. There's no other alternative than a one-to-many match to prevent that. Because the current system that we have done the best we can with being able to verify documentation, but without even verification of documentation has its limitations. So if you want absolute certainty that you are who you say you are, biometrics will provide that, yes.
And, Madam Chair, the opportunity for Department of Motor Vehicles to verify the address, the only way, there's no way to verify that address either. I mean, you trust that the documents that they bring in with the address that's there is their right address. There's other than, you know, as that was testified, mm-hmm. mail that driver's license back to that address, how else will you be able to know whether the address is correct or not?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, there is technology to verify if that address exists, but whether or not you're actually at that address. There are some other programs that we've just become acquainted with and are exploring that help with address verification, but you're right. Mailing to that address and have that individual take it would be a solid way of verifying address.
And I just want to address
I
appreciate the indulgence, Madam Chair. The issue of the employees,
mm-hmm.
I guess the bill talks about maybe two
mm-hmm.
people. I think that the key is having maybe a fingerprint
mm-hmm.
piece. Is there a problem with doing that particular piece of security in the system so that we know which employee is doing what kinds of transactions? So that if there is fraud, it's easier to track the employee that's mm-hmm. responsible for that.
Madam Chair,
as opposed to, you know, that's the key in login.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, we explored that at the time in which we converted into our new system, and we felt that we had good checks in our ability to trace back, because we've never had a problem in being able to trace back to the person who's issued. It is provided on the card that comes out of the camera, the what you call the motor vehicle code of the individual who's issued it, the person who actually presents the or makes the photo sign and initials that. So we do have a tracking system in place. Could you add the photo, the thumbprint? That is just an initial technology, and it can be done, yes.
And one last follow-up. Okay. When you were asked about what kinds of penalties by the chair for the employee that breaks the rules, you know, uses the database
mm-hmm.
or whatever, you mentioned automatic firing. Is there no criminal action that can be brought against a person that fraudulently uses the DMV database?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, where we have cases where individuals have have misused the database, and it appears that it would arise to the level of criminal. We certainly contact law enforcement. If it's there are some cases where an individual has used the database to look up or to help a relative, that's a little bit different where than an individual where they look like they are accessing the database for the purposes of any kind of criminal activity. Our first call is to state police, and before we take any action ourselves, we determine whether or not there should be a criminal investigation, and we allow that investigation to occur so that we don't get in the way of it before we take our own administrative action. So wherever there looks like there is any potential for criminal activity, our first call is to state police, and we have an excellent relationship with them on that score.
And then I just thought of another question, and it relates to the federal activity that's going on in this. And you're probably well versed in it than I. But my understanding is, based on the recent action that passed the Congress last year, that there's a negotiated rulemaking to implement part of that. And my guess is that AMVA, I forget the acronym.
Correct.
The Motor Vehicle Administration is playing a pretty significant role in that. As far as that goes, do you track regularly with what's happening there? Does Oregon have any direct connection with that negotiated rulemaking? How are we at the state of Oregon lined up, I guess, to react when and if that negotiated rulemaking is concluded?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, we are closely in contact and get frequent updates through our AMVA network of the progress that's been made. One of my staff members, who's head of my program and policy section, sits on a committee that is working on the implementation portions of the Driver License Compact, which we anticipate will serve as a framework for the discussions of what the requirements for driver license issuance should look like, because AMVA has worked for 2 or 3 years to put together a driver license issuance procedure. So we are very closely tracking it, and we will be involved. We won't be sitting in the negotiated rulemaking, but we are very much involved with that.
And how much of the issues that are involved in that are overlay or coincide with the issues that are related in this bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, the only potential risk that we see would be if there is a biometric chosen that would be a different biometric. And I don't know that with facial recognition you're fine. The only question would be if the biometric of a fingerprint of some sort is decided that would be on all cards, which are the 10 digits.
Thank you.
Senator Metzger.
I just have one question. And we have dealt with, in the legislature, I have done it with judiciary, business, with transportation, this issue. And I sometimes wonder, and I don't know the answer, so I'm not going to ask you for the answer other than just your thought on it, sometimes I wonder if we're going at this backwards. I mean, when we issue a driver's license, it was so that someone, had an idea, that they had somehow idea how to run the three pedals of a Model T and get it down the road, without running into the chicken farm or hitting somebody. And that's the only reason we have a driver's license. What has happened over all this time, we have evolved this into a source of identity, so now it has value. You can open up Visa accounts, you can, get water service, you can do all kinds of different things because we have now made this a source of identity. And so we go through all this issues, all these different problems, and try to battle the technology and those who are using technology because we have given value to something that really had no value other than some level of competence to drive a car. And I almost kind of wonder, Lorna, if we would go back to the original intent and have a law instead that says no one is allowed to use a driver's license as a form of identity. And so Visa and everybody else, they'll figure out out another way to get your identity and take that away, so it has no value anymore other than as a vehicle to show your competency on the road. And I just kind of wonder if there's if we forbidded the use of driver's licenses for identity, then and approach it from that way, we wouldn't at least have all of these different discussions or give value to those to people to obtain driver's licenses.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, there would be 51 jurisdictions standing up and applauding. But what you would have in front of you is somebody else.
Sure.
Somebody else who has the job. It was given to DMVs, obviously, because we had the equipment, we had the expertise, and we've all been struggling, especially since 9/11, with that growing responsibility. The Social Security number used to be just for benefits. Now it's the number that links all your financial records, and it is not at all secure. So, yes, we are in a, if you will, a technology arms race, and we need to recognize the upside and the downside of whatever improvements that we make. We stand ready to do the will of this committee in terms of what you think is most prudent, and we'll, you know, work with the proponents of the bill. We just want to make sure that this is not a cheap proposal, and so we want to make sure that the resources are spent to get the best effect.
Well, I guess following up on that, Senator Metzger, is that now you have to show your identity or driver's license about 3 or 4 times as you try to get on an airplane. And if it's stolen ID and he's a terrorist, then why are they worrying about all of these people showing it if it doesn't really mean
right.
anything?
Makes a passport out of something that wouldn't be a passport otherwise.
It wouldn't be. Yeah. It wouldn't be. Senator Prezansky.
Yeah, I guess following up on the Social Security, I think that's one of those things that's, you know, numbers not supposed to be used as it is. It's definitely an indicator. We use it in law enforcement, of course, for as a second identifier. But I'm still having a problem with the purpose of putting the fingerprint on the card. Because I haven't heard anyone in the testimony saying that somehow it's going to be used. I mean, at some point, we're going to have scanners at the checkout stand that's going to have your database. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I'm trying to figure out, where we're going and what purpose. I can understand that being in-house to identify mm-hmm. who is getting the license, but putting it out for more public consumption, you lose the card.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's what I'm hearing, is that's a possibility, is that it's going to be on the card. And what purpose does it serve?
Madam Chair, Senator Prezansky, that's one of the concerns that we have raised in our testimony, and that is the biggest problem that we face now with all of the technology that we've added to our card, nobody's using it. I don't know how many places are putting this under a black light. I don't know who's running the backside through a scanner, and we've had this on the backside before. You've gotten copies of rather easily detectable forgeries from law enforcement. Most people don't look very hard at the card. They don't look to see whether or not it's embedded in the plastic or laying as an overlay. We spend 50 cents more for these cards. We've got a plastic that now, if you try and heat it up and peel the laminate off, it denatures. All for the purpose of trying to prevent this card from being fraudulently, you know, duplicated or misused. But it's really up to the community that uses this card as a source of identification to take advantage of the features that are in it in order to make sure that the person who's in front of them. So if we're going to go to the expense of doing a more thorough job of issuance in terms of trying to prevent individuals from getting a good card with bad data, then it would be very important for those who are using this card also to make sure that they're not sitting with a forgery in their hand as well. So embedding additional information in the card may not be very useful at this point, and maybe something that may not want to consider in this bill, because there may be more changes to come to the card as a result of the implementation of the Intelligence Reform Act. And I don't know whether that issue is addressed at all in the proposed amendments, but we did bring that up with the sponsors of the bill.
Madam Chair, I don't believe that there was anybody's intention that the fingerprint would actually be on the card, where you could actually, I mean, you'd see a fingerprint on the card. I believe that that would be stored at the department, mm-hmm. so that when somebody would go in, they'd put their thumbprint or whatnot on a reader, and it would be able to then scan through the system, and it wouldn't be actually on the driver's license, because that would be a big problem.
Yeah, I've heard two things. I've heard that, but I also heard that they're talking about maybe not the actual fingerprint, but certain characteristics would be embedded in the card. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, so now we're going to give more identity, you and me, into something that if we lose it, which happens every day to people, then all of a sudden we've got something else out there.
Yeah, that's
all right, Lorna, I'm going to thank you for...
Thank you.
Your testimony, and I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 640. Committee, we have heard just about all the information that I think we're going to hear about studded tires. I would like today to either decide that we're never going to hear it again or that we're going to move it. And you have three amendments before you. We've been over that a little bit with the reduction from the $10 to the $5. And then the two that you have to choose between is the 3 and the 4. The thing that disturbs me a little bit about the 4, and I'm going to open the public the work session before I do anything else. I open the work session on Senate Bill 842. In looking at the amendment, the dash 4 amendment, I think it takes in more of the state than I think that I would like.
Madam Chair, can I respond? I mean, sure. We got these three. I know Senator Decker talked to me. He asked me what my comfort was. I said, I'm not sure. Let's see what they are. We just saw them today. I can tell you I will not support the dash fours. I'm really questioning about the dash threes even, okay. Because, you know, one of the things that we're looking at is basically having seven counties basically take on this task of being charged for this. There's many people that are going to be using those roadways that are going to be in studded tires and all like that. I personally am not ready to vote on any of these today.
Okay.
And I understand the chair may want to move it, and if you do, you know, so be it. Yeah. It's just that, you know, we're as much as we want to get something the Ways and Means, I want to make sure that we put something out that we feel comfortable getting out there, because, you know, I've just not at this point had heard anything back from any of my constituents or even had the opportunity to talk to them.
Yeah,
they're going to be impacted. I've got two counties, one that would be and one that wouldn't, under the dash threes, under the dash fours, all of them would be.
What would be impacted under the dash threes?
Lane County.
Yes, it would.
And even if it wasn't, I mean, is it fair to
Madam
have the same, what I call the well, let me get area of...
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Let me get
I
the temperature of the water here.
The you know, if we were to adopt the dash threes, I would love to be a Les Schwab owner in Yamhill County or Newburg or in Skepoos or, mm-hmm. or you know, up you know, close to or Vancouver, for that matter. Because you get all that business almost immediately. Madam Chair, I would just say that you know, we've talked about studded tires a lot in this building over the last several years, and you know, way back. I mean, I can't remember a session where we haven't talked about it. I would suggest this bill isn't going to pass this legislature, and you know, I'm torn by this issue because I see the damage out there, but I also recognize that there are issues that are bigger than this that this legislature is going to deal with, and I would suggest that we just put this issue to bed tonight here and go on about other issues. I'm, you know, it's been here, it's gonna come back.
Senator Metzger.
Well, I'd be happy to support the dash two amendments. I think it's important to, as I said before, and I agree with Senator Deckert, the idea is to allow people to utilize the tires who have that sense, again, that they want to do that, but to start incenting a different type of behavior, because it really affects us. And the dash two is, of course, it's pretty nominal, but again, I think that would send a strong statement. I think Senator Starr has a good point as well. And I think with Senator Przanski's reluctance, I think that it would probably not do us any value at this point.
All right. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 842.
Are we through?
It's 40 today.
Yes. We're about to.
Yeah.
Are we adjourned, Madam Chair?
Excuse me. If there's no other business, call the meeting adjourned.